Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll. And take it away, Duff McKagan, with a joke of the week.
Chris Jericho, Duff McKagan calling. Hope you're doing well. Hope everybody out there is doing well. You know, I call in jokes all the time here. And I get, you know, sometimes I run low. Like, I've only got maybe two or three Motown puns left. Four tops. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
That one's really good. I like that one. Duff's been on a little bit of on a roll lately. His musical jokes are always funny. And speaking of music, Fozzy's kicking off our 25th anniversary tour on October 3rd in Woodstock, Georgia. We're taking the celebration to Florida, Alabama, North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Michigan, New York, before we wrap up this momentous run in Cleveland, Ohio on October 21st. Now, if you didn't hear your state mentioned, don't worry. We're doing a whole year and a half of this 25th anniversary tour. So I always get the, when are you coming to Canada? When are you coming to Australia? When are you coming to LA? We're coming everywhere. All over the place, baby. So go to FozzyRock.com for all ticket information and VIP information on the first leg of the Fozzy 25th anniversary tour. And of course, we're doing our legendary VIP meet and greets. We're going to meet you, take pictures, sign stuff, play a mini set for you. You're going to hear songs that you're not going to hear later on that night. So come celebrate 25 years of Fozzy. Hard to believe. Ticket details at FozzyRock.com. And today in the show, we're celebrating another 25-year milestone event, the end of one of the best and funniest shows on TV, Curb Your Enthusiasm. Larry David's classic series ends this Sunday night, April 7th on HBO. The finale airs. It's been an incredible 25-year run. Wow. Larry should have hired Fozzy to do the theme song for the last episode. But what a great run Larry has had with his amazing cast, including Cheryl Hines, who plays Larry's wife and eventual ex-wife for the show's run, Cheryl. She got so many great stories about the improv sitcom and working with Larry David and the rest of the cast. She gives a detailed look at how filming worked on the show, what it was like to improv scenes based on a single line description, what made Richard Lewis, the late great Richard Lewis, and Larry's interactions so funny, and how her off-camera friendship with Larry developed. There's some great Larry David-esque moments. She's got one really funny real-life story about the time she and Larry went to lunch. Great anecdotes about some of the show's guest stars like Wanda Sykes and Sherry O'Terry from SNL. She recounts her audition process, how she got the gig, the first scene she ever filmed with Larry David, why she thinks this is really the end of Curb. Plus, she talks about working with Robin Williams. She talks about being a groundling like I am. She talks about growing up in frost-proof Florida and how that ties into an experience I had. The first and only time I've ever mentioned frostproof Florida on this show, maybe the last. But it is the end of the amazing run of Curb Your Enthusiasm. And Cheryl Hines, who's been here from the start on that show, is with us today on Talk is Jericho. And it's going to be pretty, 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 pretty good. I'm just going to jump right in. So this is absolutely hilarious. So I literally was just in Boca Raton yesterday. My son goes, he works there and lives there. And we were at a hotel with my wife, and there was a big kind of a convention, and we were trying to figure out who it was. So we looked it up, and it was like the LCE, whatever, based in frostproof Florida.
Oh my gosh.
And I just happened to see, of course, Wikipedia, Cheryl's family from Frost. I never heard of the place before.
No, it's so tiny. I can't even believe. I mean, I haven't been there in a while, but when I was growing up, they had one traffic light and it was a blinking yellow light. That was it. It's so small.
That's what I was just like. Yes, the LCE, which is like, I don't know, even Luminet Solar Energy. Based in frostproof Florida.
It sounds like they just made up the name for that.
It does. And I literally just saw that 3 seconds ago. And I was like, oh, what a hilarious coincidence.
That is so funny.
Great to talk to you. Obviously, lots to discuss. Biggest thing to discuss is the final season of one of the greatest shows of all time. And you've been on it for the whole run of the series, Curb Your Enthusiasm. How does it feel? This show, it never ends, but now it finally is.
I know. It's hard to believe that it's over.
Yeah.
Because it's been, yeah, like you said, I mean, you know, it started as a 1 hour special on HBO, and that was, I was cast in that in 1999.
Wow. Wow. Think about that, right?
No, it's so crazy. it's just been such a fixture of my life that I don't know. It feels strange that it's over.
So it was originally just a 1 hour special?
Yeah. Yeah. So you know how stand-ups do a 1 hour stand-up?
Right.
Well, Larry had an idea that he was going to return to stand-up and wanted to do a mockumentary about his return to stand-up, where at the end, he gets on stage or doesn't even get on stage and just says, no, I'm not doing it, which is hilarious. And that's what the 1 hour special was. And when they started working on it, I don't know who exactly thought of it first, but they thought, well, this would be a fun series.
So let's talk about how you got this role, because there's another thing in my 3 minutes of research that I did. I am also a groundling.
You are?
Yes. I was a groundling, an honorary groundling with Cooking with Gas, with Mindy Sterling and Michael Hitchcock.
Those are my people. Those are my people.
Yeah. So in about 2005 and six, I worked with them for about a year. And what an amazing experience. But you are a groundling. Kind of explain that process and what exactly you had to do to be a groundling.
So the Groundling Theater is a small 99-seat theater here in Los Angeles on Melrose. We do sketch comedy and improv. Mm. And as you know, you have to go through, there's a whole school involved and in different levels, and you have to go through each level and be approved to go to the next level. And then at some point, if you make it there, there's a main company that's 30 people, and they can't vote somebody into the main company until somebody steps up and there's a space. That's what's so difficult about it. And I went through that whole process and performed there for a long time, and then was invited to be a groundling member. So that was a huge turning point for me in my life.
Well, like you said, it's such a closed society. And like I said, I rephrase it. I wasn't a groundling per se. I was an honorary groundling working with Cooking with Gas, which is guests, celebrities, whatever it may be. But and then once I started going there every Sunday, then Mindy said, you need to take some of these classes because you're really good at the big things. You need to learn the foundation thing. But it's like the Supreme Court. You can't get in unless somebody leaves.
Shuts down. I know. It's tough.
So you could be waiting for like a year to get in, or years.
Yes, that's what's so tough. And there are plenty of really talented, deserving people that just don't get into the main company because there's simply not space available.
Right.
It's frustrating.
When you were a groundling, who else was part of the troupe at that point?
It was Will Forte, Rachel Harris. I did a show with Melissa McCarthy. Mm-hmm. You know, Mindy Sterling was my teacher several times.
Oh my gosh. She's so great. For those who don't know, she plays Frau Farbissina in Austin Powers. That's kind of her claim to fame.
Yeah. She's amazing. I don't know. You know, Kristen Wiig was like right behind me.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, everybody sort of gets moved up and gets to perform together. And yeah, it's a bit of a magical place.
It's interesting because when I started doing it, I can't remember who it was. Let's say it was Michael probably. It was like, listen, they call it the Phil Hartman Theater.
Yeah.
And he said it holds like 99 people. So if you kill it, you've killed it in front of 99 people. If you bomb, you've bombed in front of 99 people. Not a big deal either way.
Yeah.
Just have fun, right?
Yeah. That is hard as a performer to process because, you know, before you walk out on that stage, you feel like, oh my gosh, everything in my life is riding on this performance. And especially with improv, it is, you don't know what you're going to say next and you don't know how the improv is going to go. And not every improv is good.
Yes.
And you have to be, I'm sure it's probably like being an athlete, as you know. I mean, you have to, if something doesn't go right, you have to let it go immediately and start thinking about your next move, right?
Right.
Otherwise, you just you second guessing yourself, and then you're not doing your best, and then you get bogged down in self-doubt and sort of paralyzed in that. That's what's so great about improv, is it teaches you, like you're saying, you're either going to do great or you might fall on your face. in front of some people, and life is going to go on either way.
Yeah. It was a great learning experience just as far as committing to a character. I love the team aspect. Like you said, there's nothing better than good improv and probably nothing worse than bad.
Yeah.
But with some of those geniuses, like even when I was first getting into it, you just keep your stick on the ice and you're going to score.
Yeah, because you're right. That's part of what they teach you is to trust your scene partner, which is also hard, but I'm sure you can speak to it better than anybody, but because it takes two people, and even let's say in an improv, you're making a decision in the moment that you're going to punch the guy in the scene that you're with. First of all, you can't just punch somebody. You have to be connected, and you have to be reading each other, and you have to show it in your eyes and your movement that you're pulling your hand back, because they have to take the punch, they have to turn their head, and they have to sell it, right. I like that I'm explaining this to you. You know, your scene partners want that. They want to work with you, and they want to make you look good, and they want to make your punch look good. You have to trust those guys and women, plus the people.
Did that improv and Ground League experience help you get the role for Curb Your Enthusiasm?
Yeah, definitely. You know, Curb is all improvised. So there's no script, and there never has been.
Wow.
Yeah. I was just talking to an actor who did a day on Curb. And she said, even when she went into audition, they just gave her a slip of paper that had maybe two sentences on it saying, you're going to take Larry's order and it doesn't go well. I just need that. And she said she didn't know what the episode was about. She didn't know what any of the other scenes were about. That's all she got to go in and improvise with. And that's all she got. Even when she got the part when she showed up to work, that's all she got.
Yeah.
Yeah, it goes back to those improv skills where you're just listening to your scene partner. In this case, it's Larry David, and reacting, you know, to what he says and trying to make sense of it. And
man,
yeah. And at the same time, you know, for my character, Cheryl David, I was always asking him, why would you do that? Why would you trip Shaquille O'Neal at a Lakers game? Like, how could you? But because I didn't even know what was going on in the episode. I was only hearing what Larry was telling me.
That's so exciting, though, like as a performer and as an actor. Like, I'm thinking Curb or, like, you know, the Christopher Guest, you know, mockumentaries of you just get a basic, like you said, here's the scene's sentence.
Yeah.
And you got to do the rest. You got to be locked in. Once again, trust your scene partner.
Yeah, you have to be locked in and 100% committed, which is also not easy to do. You know, it's not easy to sort of turn yourself over and not judge yourself, you know, while you're reacting, because you don't have lines to say, to not be thinking, oh, is this funny? Is this not funny? And that's one of the reasons why Larry never wanted to give anybody he wrote a story outline. He didn't even want to give people the story outline because he didn't want actors trying to think of, oh, you know, what would be funny if in this scene I said this,
right?
Because you just can't, it doesn't work that way. And, you know, it'll look forced and it'll sound forced and it won't be true to the moment that's going on in the scene.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We're all hungry. I'm hungry too. But to make him wait another 10 minutes for a few measly potatoes, shame on you. Shame on all of you. Okay. That's not how we do things here in America. We don't wait for seconds. Never.
So how did you end up getting this role in Curb then? Because it's a huge role. You're playing Larry David's wife.
Yeah.
And once again, there has to be a lot of trust on his side to cast you in this.
Well, fortunately for me, they were looking for an unknown actress at the time.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Because they did want it to feel like it could be documentary for all people knew, because it was Larry David playing Larry David. And Larry David had done stand up before. And, you know, Jerry Seinfeld was in the 1 hour special, and Richard Lewis, I think, was in the 1 hour special. So you have people that you're watching it thinking, oh, those are real people. So I guess this must be his wife. I've never seen it before. So that worked out well for me. But also the director, Robert Whitey, who directed the 1 hour special, came to see a show that I was in, a sketch show. And I had written a ridiculous sketch that he loved and thought, oh, Larry would appreciate your sense of humor.
What was the sketch?
Okay, I'll tell you. Well, it was a workplace sketch, and I was a, you know, worker in an office, and we were doing an earthquake safety seminar. Somebody, you know, an expert came in to go over the safety rules during an earthquake, and everybody seemed to be very knowledgeable about what to do in an earthquake. You know, he said, do you light a candle if the electricity goes out? And someone said, no, because you're not, you have to make sure that the gas line hasn't been broken. And so my character is just feeling inadequate, that she doesn't know any of this stuff, but her coworkers do. And then he asked, what do you do if there's an earthquake and your water supply is cut off? And I said, well, if push comes to shove, you can drink your own urine. And everybody got quiet and disgusted. And he said, or, you know, there's usually water in the heater tank. So you could probably just drink that water first.
Right.
And then my character would not let it go. I was like, okay, you guys, I don't drink my own urine. Let me just say right now, I don't drink my own urine. And, you know, just sort of started spinning,
right.
Which was creeping everybody out even more than her saying it to begin with. And actually, I was called in because of that sketch of when I walked in to the room. Bob Whitey said, oh, this is Cheryl Hines, the urine girl. I was like, well, let's hope that doesn't stick.
So how was it getting to know Larry? Obviously, like, once again, I'm assuming that at least every talk show you see or whatever, he's pretty close in real life, or as he is on the show.
Yeah.
Once again, when you're playing somebody's wife, you have to get these years of the buildup of a relationship that's not there because you just know him for a day.
Yeah, you're so right. So in this situation and in improvs, you have to assume a relationship with someone. So I had to just assume that, like you're saying, Larry and I had been married for a while. And I remember our first episode was called The Pants Tent. When he sat down, his corduroy pants would sort of bunch up to make it look like maybe he was sexually aroused when he wasn't. And I remember at the time just like reaching over and poking down the material in his lap, not thinking anything of it, because that's what you would do in an improv, right? You just assume a relationship and you go, and that's what you would do
with your
husband. And then the more I got to know Larry, the more I realized, oh, he doesn't like people touching him. He has a lot of little rules that I didn't know about, which I'm glad I didn't know about, right? I would have never done that. But yeah, he, you know, in real life, listen, I went to lunch with him once, and this person stopped and said, oh, Larry, we went to school together. And Larry was like, oh, great. Good to see you again. We sit down, and Larry's not paying attention at all to what's going on with me and him. And I said, what are you doing? Like, are we not going to have a conversation now? And he said, well, I have to use the bathroom, but I don't want to have to walk by that guy again. I don't have to go through the whole thing. Yeah, no, I know, school. And that was our whole lunch.
And this isn't an episode of the show. This is real.
This is not an episode. That is another Tuesday. You know what I mean? So he is that person, and it's funny, and you know what's hilarious about him. But also, yeah, you're like, oh, then why are we at lunch if you're just kind of fixate on the guy and walking by him? I think he even went out like a different exit to go to the bathroom at the place next door. So it just turned into, you know, it just turns into something more than it needs to be.
He was just on Seth Meyers' show the other night, and they were talking about Susie Essman.
Yeah.
This might have been a bit. I don't know, but I don't think it was. And Seth's like, oh, yeah, I know Susie. Give her my regards. And Larry instantly, like, what do you mean, give her your regards? Give regards. What am I supposed to say? Seth gives his regards. What are regards? What an umbrella statement. It's just like this whole thing about give my regards. And it's like, and all of us kind of have the kernel of truth where it's like, he's kind of right, you know?
Right. Right. No, I have been with him when someone called and asked him if he wanted to go to lunch. And he said, no. And I said, Larry, you can't just say no. And he said, I don't want to. It's like, well, then nobody wants to, but you either do it anyway or you make an excuse until they stop asking. He's like, why go through that?
How long did it take? Because I love you. I mean, you mentioned the pants tent, and there was the line of you want people to think you constantly have an erection?
Yeah.
You're constantly the straight man, no pun intended, for Larry. How long did it take for you to figure that? Because you said Larry gave you no direction.
Well, when I was walking into audition, the casting director had told me, listen, you've been married to Larry for a while and you don't put up with his bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
That's really all you need to know. So I knew quickly, you know, as soon as I met Larry, I realized, oh, I see what it is. Because even in that 1 hour special, he was doing stand up. I don't even know if the scene made it in. It's been a while.
Sure,
I think it did. When he was doing stand-up and when he came off the stage, I said, you know, that was pretty good, but I've got some notes. I took some notes. Just because I knew as an actor, especially as a stand-up comedian, what is the last thing that you want to hear when you get off the stage, but your spouse giving you
notes,
comedy notes? I knew what would push his buttons, you know, and who his character or that version of himself would be. So anything I could do to highlight that was going to be my job.
When did you find out that the show was going to be more than just a 1 hour special?
It was actually before the special aired, but I was teaching at the Groundlings at the time. I don't know how, but I talked to Larry during my break. I think this is what happened. I was definitely at the Groundlings, whether I was there doing the Sunday show or teaching. But I remember him calling and saying, hey, this is going to be a series. Do you want to play my wife? And I said, oh my God, this is the best news I've ever heard. And he said, I hope that's not true. I hope that's not true. And I was like, Larry, I'm living in a one-bedroom apartment in West Hollywood. And for so many reasons, that is true. So it was changed my life, yeah.
All right, you stole my outgoing message on my answering machine.
What are you, crazy?
How long? I mean, this is...
What are you, nuts?
I know you're ethical. Huh? I'm ethical. We don't, you know, when people steal jokes, we fucking hate that. But I hate when people steal my outgoing messages. I remember calling
you. Don't even know what you're talking about. You are
you
so
have my
base.
Same answering machine outgoing message, and it
that's,
bugs
that's
me.
That's my message. I didn't get that message.
Paris.
You wrote it in Paris. I had that message 7 years ago.
Well, the show becomes a hit right out of the gate, obviously, because Seinfeld is such a huge success. And then I remember at first, it's like, oh, the real George or the guy behind Jerry, and who is this guy? But it didn't take long to be like, this is like Seinfeld with no rules.
Right.
Just swearing, you know, he gets a pubic hair stuck in his teeth. Like, this is just fucking batshit crazy. Like, right out of the gate. And so you hit the ground running with this show, but it's a big show pretty much instantly, right?
Yeah, it's interesting because I remember shooting and driving home thinking, I don't know how this is going to be a TV show. I feel like it's just two people talking in the kitchen. Like, how is... And it was so different than other sitcoms. Still is, you know.
Sure.
But at the beginning, I think it was definitely a smaller audience that, I guess, was curious about it. And then it became bigger and bigger because I'm assuming people would tell each other. And then, you know, the reviews were great. People didn't know what to make of it, but they were definitely excited that Larry was doing mm-hmm. a show. So people were so curious to see what he was going to do. And then as the years went on, you know, Larry's just become part of pop culture almost.
Well, big time. You know, and he's such a like Jack Black quality. He's not looking like a leading man, but that endears him to us.
Yeah, it's gotten to the point where you just see a silhouette of him.
Yeah, and you know who it is.
You know who it is. And it evokes a feeling, you know, where you're like, oh my God, cue the music.
Yeah. And because it was Larry and obviously had so many contacts, there's so many big stars that have been in the show over the years. Who were some of your favorites to work with, even if it was just once or if it was throughout a few seasons?
Well, I love Wanda Sykes. I had so much fun with her. And of course, Richard Lewis, so sad that he just
passed away. Yeah.
Passed away. But we had a lot of fun together. And Richard was so funny because, you know, he was neurotic. And because the show was improvised, anytime he would see me and Larry talking before they said action, it would drive him crazy and he'd yell across the room, "What are you talking about? Well, are you guys trying to come up with bits?" No, we're talking about lunch. I don't believe you. He kept things lively.
It's so great just to interrupt. Yeah. It's so great. These guys, their real life personas is who they're playing.
Yeah.
Like, this is not acting.
Well, especially those two, Larry and Richard, they had such a funny relationship. Sort of always trying to outdo each other. And at the same time, like a genuine love. That's very sweet. But, you know, there have been so many people. I had such a great time when we did the season with the Seinfeld cast.
Oh, my gosh. That was so great.
I mean, there were some moments when I was looking around thinking, oh, am I dreaming this? Because this seems like a dream. We're on the set of Seinfeld that they have brought back for this. For Curb, on the set of Seinfeld, and I'm with the cast of Seinfeld. I'm now in the Seinfeld reunion as Cheryl David, and Larry David is right there. It was just like my head was about to explode. So that was amazing.
That was such a great season. Obviously, this instead of doing like a Seinfeld reunion, they decided to play it out over multiple episodes on Curb.
Yeah. And of course, I loved it because in the Curb storyline, the reason Larry wanted to do a Seinfeld reunion was to be able to cast my character, Cheryl David, because he was trying to woo her back.
Right.
So I loved everything about that.
How was that for you when you get the script and realize, oh, they're going to get a divorce? Did you think that maybe you were going to be off the show or?
Yeah, I did. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because I had told Larry the story of my friend who was on an airplane and they had said that the landing gear wasn't working properly. They were expecting a rough landing. So they started circling, dumping fuel because they didn't want a lot of fuel when they landed. And people started calling home. To say, I love you. This is going to be rough. And my friend called her husband and he said, I can't talk right now. The technician, I've been waiting for this guy all day. And she was like, no, I need to tell you I love you. He's like, I got to call you back. I can't.
Oh my gosh.
And so when I told Larry that, he thought it was so funny. And then the next thing you know, that's why. We're getting divorced in Curb. But, you know, there was a season, I think. I know there was at least a season that I wasn't in it after that because Larry wanted to date. Mm-hmm. That was hard. And at the same time, I was probably doing Suburgatory or I don't know. I was doing, it wasn't like I was just sitting around crying all day. Although I could have. but I was working, so... And then he called, I don't know, a year later or something and said, okay, come back and, you know, you're my ex-wife. And I was like, great.
And that's a little bit Larry would do that too. Like you mentioned, it's season 12, started in 99. So it would be every couple of years that Larry would and maybe you know, like, would he take him some time to amass enough material for a new season?
Exactly.
Take 2 or 3 years and we're ready when we're ready?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, he writes down ideas every day when he hears something funny. Every season since the first, he would say, this is probably the only season. So I never expected this to go on. I just expected that was probably going to be our last season. But then he would compile ideas and stories. And then I guess talk to HBO and say, okay, I want to do another season. And they'd say, great. It's a nice way to work.
So when you show up for a season, do you get like the rundown of the season arc, or is it just episode by episode? Or,
well, the first three seasons, I didn't see a story outline, and I didn't know what any of it was about. And then after that, Larry started sending me the outlines, and we would talk. You know, I'm good friends with Larry, so sometimes we talked about it beforehand. Mm-hmm. It certainly has never been how sitcoms are usually done, because they usually have a script and you sit down,
right.
Do a table read with the cast and the studio. Then they rewrite it, what works, what doesn't work. Sometimes people get recast after a table read. I mean, they're high pressure events, these table reads. But Curb never had that. The only time we had a table read on Curb was during the Seinfeld reunion show, because there was a table read. But it also felt weird because I was like, whoa, I guess I need to be good in this table.
It's hard though. I can imagine like not wanting to do a table read if it's improv, because improv, you got to be in the moment. I wouldn't want to give away any of my good lines.
No.
You know, and then either blow them or find out that maybe they weren't as good as I thought they were. Like, you got to be in on it, you know?
Oh, you're right. No, so we never did. And to your point, we never even had rehearsals. So usually...
Really?
Yeah. You know, you do blocking where you're going to stand and talk or walk out. So if we did a blocking rehearsal for the camera crew, so they knew we were going to go, and we would talk gibberish. We wouldn't even talk. You couldn't even talk about the scene before the camera started rolling.
Yeah.
It would be something like, and then I might sit down here, ba-da-ba-boop, ba-da-ba-bop, and then I might walk out this door. And that would be our rehearsal.
How many takes would you do for a scene?
It would all depend. I think there was one. There were a few times when maybe Larry and I, if it was just the two of us, might only do it twice. Mm. But the more people that are involved, the more you do it, because the cameras have to shift around and all of that.
Sure. Yeah.
But usually after the first take, the Larry and the director would talk, and they might come back and say, okay, you don't need to talk about your aunt, but you can keep talking about your mom, and let's just try it again.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah.
Who is it that would make you break the most?
Sherry O'Terry was on. And she was playing somebody who was a little bit crazy. I was trying not to even look at her. You know, I was trying to not focus my eyes when she was talking, because I couldn't get through it. But she, for whatever reason, was killing me, really making me laugh. And then Larry, of course, Larry would say some of the most ridiculous things. I couldn't break, though, because I didn't want to ruin the shot.
Right.
Larry was the worst at breaking, actually.
Larry, really?
Yeah. Yeah. He was always laughing.
Nope, I didn't hit it. I didn't tap it. I didn't tear into it. And we still get no mail. Unbelievable.
Let's talk a little bit about Bob Einstein. So once again, growing up in Canada, in Winnipeg, Canada, there was a show called Bizarre, and that's where he started Super Dave Osborne.
Yeah.
Which was like a Canadian icon. So when he was first showed up, I was like, it's Super Dave. Oh my gosh, Super Dave's in this. But what a hilarious character throughout the entire, his run in the show.
Oh my gosh, Bob. Yeah, he was hilarious. You know, I remember doing, we were doing a scene, you know, while the camera's rolling. Larry's in the scene, Bob's in the scene, I'm in the scene. And Bob says something like, well, you know, Cheryl and I had a thing. And Larry said, what are you talking about? And he's like, yeah, we had a very physical relationship. And then he just starts, you know, going, improvising a ridiculous story. And Larry's like, cut, what are you doing? What are you talking about? And Bob, you know, and Bob said, well, I think it would be fun to, you know, explore that. I was like, are you insane? That's not at all what this scene is about. But Bob was a lot of fun. And I felt the same way when I first met him. I was, oh my God, it's Super Dave from David Letterman. That's how.
Yeah, David Letterman, right.
And that was always hilarious and sort of stone-faced while he did ridiculous things.
Completely stone-faced. That's the beauty of it, playing it straight the whole time.
Yeah.
But I guess that's kind of the danger that you run into when you have a completely improv show, that someone might take it. Oh, yeah, well, Cheryl and I had an affair. Like, I'm sure Larry would be like you said, that probably happened more than once, where he's like, you can't take it this way.
That's the difference between improvising in front of an audience and improvising, because I would find it terrifying. Well, I do find it terrifying doing live improv in front of an audience, because there, like you said, there's no going back. You have to keep justifying everything that you said, that your scene partner said, and you're trying to make it make sense and also hope that it's entertaining. But Young Curb, we had the luxury of being able to cut if somebody started going off on. Yeah, definitely. There were times when somebody would start saying something and Larry would be like, I don't say that. Look at me like, oh my God, am I fired?
You don't have to yes and when you can just cut the tape.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think this is really the last season? And why do you think it's the last season?
I definitely think it's the last season because Larry has never announced it before to the world. Like, this is it.
Right.
So I think he's ready to end it. You know, I'm hoping that maybe down the road, there'll be, maybe he'll revisit. Now I'm just throwing things out there. In a special or an HBO movie. I don't know. But yes, he definitely is saying this is the end of Curb Your Enthusiasm as a series.
How do you feel about that after being part of your life for so long?
It's hard. It's bittersweet, right? Because I'm so grateful that I had this show and the people from the show that have become really good friends of mine. And just the experience, like I learned a lot as an actor, as a person. So that part is really beautiful. And then it's also, it's a loss, feels like a loss. And one of those times in your life when, this chapter is closing, but then you feel, you know, another one will open, but it's hard. It's hard.
I mean, it is kind of a one in a million, you know, a hit show based on whatever schedule Larry wants. Like, there's no grind to it.
Yes, it was. And just as an actor, Susie Essman and I talk about it all the time because, you know, you do another show the night before, you're going over your lines.
Right, right.
Memorizing, trying to keep everything straight in your mind and trying to keep calm and trying to, you know, you just have to really, like you said, it's a bit of a grind because it's, you shoot it all day, you get 12 hours in between and you do it again the next day. But Curb, because we didn't have any lines and most of the time I didn't even know what the show was about, I didn't have to spend time making sure I have all the lines and the words and I know what the other people in the show are going to say, and you didn't have any of that. So it was just it was always just so fun. Like, it felt like you were going to summer camp with your best friends.
It's funny. I did a show called Masked Singer a couple of years ago.
Oh, yes. Hi. Yeah.
Have you done it?
Well, I've been a guest
judge or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So when I did that show, I felt like Larry David, because obviously, as you know, you have to be completely, it's mystery. you have to sit in your trailer all day. They come get you. You wear a mask. You put your costume. You don't talk to anybody. And I said, this is the greatest show ever. I don't have to have those uncomfortable talks with anybody. I don't have to do anything, make any type of relationship with anybody. I just sit in here, do my gig. And it was just like, what a Larry David way to think, right?
That is so funny because other people that I've talked to that have done the show, I said, it was so hard. I had to wear a mask. I wasn't allowed to talk to anybody. Nobody was allowed to talk to me. And I like that you're like, yeah, it was heaven. Nobody talked to me. I didn't have to make small talk with anybody.
You do start to think, like, obviously, it was the George Costanza, but now in this modern era, it's the Larry David. You start thinking like Larry, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Did you like it? Was it fun or was
it? It was a blast. Really? I really loved it. Yeah, I had a great time with it. Yeah. I didn't like the fact that I couldn't talk to anybody because I'm friends with Ken Jeong and you can't tell even the judges, you guys don't even know. So
no,
it wasn't no quite that idea. Cool. It was a fun time though. It was cool.
Yeah. It seems terrifying to have to sing. I mean, I'm not a good singer.
Well, you got to sing, but on top of that, you have to wear the costume. Yeah. That's the hardest thing, right? So singing is almost secondary in deference to playing this character and, you know, all the different stuff that you have to do, you know?
I know, because how can you even see where you're going?
It's crazy. And I was wearing a big giant like dinosaur outfit and you got to wear the Janet Jackson microphone and you can see like this little thing like this and could barely breathe and it's just like,
I don't know how that you must have felt like, oh my gosh, I'm in an alternate reality.
Yeah, well, yeah, especially when you're in a giant pink dinosaur costume wearing a bride's dress. So
I don't save dates. The whole system screwed up. You don't need to send me something to tell me you're going to send me something. Just send it. You know, if I'm saying something to you, I don't say to you, I'm going to say something to you and then say it. I just say it.
This is the way things are done, okay, asshole? You're going to come and you're going to enjoy it.
Let's talk about some of the other great things that you've done. And one of the things you mentioned working with so many geniuses on Curb. You worked with possibly the greatest comedy genius of all time. Of course, you know, I'm going to say Robin Williams in RV, which I didn't see in the theater, by the way. I really enjoyed that movie. How was it working with Robin Williams?
Robin was, you know, he was just a beautiful soul. He couldn't help himself doing comedy bits. And what was great about him is even, you know, when you're in line at lunch and he's just doing comedy bit after comedy bit about the carrots, about this, about that. And what was great is it didn't matter if you were listening or not. He was going to do them. he was very, very smart. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he, of course, improvised all the time. But just to hear him reference historical people and moments and pop culture, it was fascinating. He was amazing. And at the same time, as a human being, you know, my mom would come on the set and he made it a point to remember her name and he'd say, Rosemary, I'm so happy you're here, and hug her. He really had a way of making people feel special.
When you would work with a guy like that, does that help you as a professional to see how he's kind of, I mean, obviously he's the leading man, he's a huge star, but he's still taking time to meet your mom. Does that kind of rub off on you as a performer?
Oh, definitely, because, you know, he would set the bar. And the same with Larry. Larry sets the bar. Somebody who's the star of the film or the show, everybody looks to them to see how they're behaving.
Right.
And that then they sort of fall in line behind that. And Robin, I remember when we were shooting RV, there was a day when he gave a speech outside in front of, I don't know, 200 people, or maybe 100. Mm-hmm. It was a long day of shooting for him. And my character was standing in the back of the crowd. We shot all of his stuff. And then they turned the cameras around, which also, especially in a film, takes a long time. So you have to move the cameras, the lights.
Right.
So there was a long break. And I didn't even have a line. I just had a moment where my character sees his character. And I just assumed he went home because he had already worked all day. And it was just coverage on me nodding to him. And I assumed, you know, there would be somebody standing in. And when I looked, when we were about to roll, I looked up and he was standing there. And afterwards, I said, Robin, why are you here? You should have gone home. You should. What are you doing here? And he said, oh, of course I want to be here for you. I wouldn't leave you. It was really a moment, especially as a performer, where you could feel his respect for everybody on the set. I've been in plenty of productions where the camera turns around and you're talking to nobody.
Talk to this, the hand. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So that to me, I just was so impressed with him and his work ethic. Not to mention just watching him as a performer. You know, he never edited himself, or if he thought something was funny, he'd say it.
Right. No filter, right?
No filter, which is also, was also inspiring.
Did he do a lot of improv then?
Yes. I mean, he would always do the scripts and then some.
Right. I was just watching something the other day from like 1981 or something. I think when he was doing Mark and Mindy, and it was like, you know, Opticon eye drops. I use them to clear up my eyes. That's all he had to say. And it's like freaking 20 minutes. And the director said, can you please just say the line?
Yeah.
He couldn't or wouldn't do it. He's like, I'm having too much fun.
Yeah, that's what he would do. I think some people, you know, will be like, okay, we still need to get the eye drops line. But yeah, he couldn't help himself. That's what I'm saying.
That's what he was, yeah.
Yeah, he was who he was. And that's what people loved about him.
As we start to wind down here, I have to bring up the fact that you're a part of American royalty and that you're a Kennedy. I mean, what a thing to grow up to become a Kennedy. Do you ever think of that sometimes and go, oh my gosh, I'm a Kennedy?
I guess I do. It's different because I never, you know, I'm married to Robert Kennedy.
Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Yeah.
Once in a while, I have those moments. You know, especially when we got married and his mom, Ethel, I mean, Bobby and I were just going to go to the courthouse and they get married and have a party after. And Ethel said, well, don't you want to get married on my lawn? And I said, well, Ethel, she said, of course you do. What, you know, why wouldn't you? And I was like, yeah, okay. Yes, that sounds amazing. And then there are those moments when I would feel like, oh, there's so much history there. And I'm having this beautiful conversation with Ethel Kennedy. So there are definitely moments of it. Usually I don't, like, day to day, I don't wake up thinking, oh, I'm a Kennedy. but yeah, there are definitely moments.
I mean, there's even a chance that you could be the first lady.
Can you? Yeah.
I mean, just think about the frost-proof Florida.
Frostproof goes to DC. I mean, DC could use a little frostproof, I think.
I mean, it could. Some of the small town values from frostproof.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, let's bring it to DC.
Do you have to keep the political side of your life separate from the acting side? Does it matter?
Well, I try to keep them separate, honestly, because they are two separate worlds.
Yeah.
So I've never been that politically outspoken. It's just not been my passion or my lane.
Right.
I've known all of my life that I wanted to be an actress. And so I've built my life as an actor. And then now these two worlds are just, you know, they're big. The political world, because Bobby's now running for president.
Right.
And, you know, Curb is ending. It's just, there are two worlds that are, they don't necessarily need to intersect.
Sure, of course.
Because by the nature of running for president, I mean, not everybody is going to like the person who's running. And everybody's allowed to vote for who they want.
Yeah.
And listen to who, you know, I mean, hopefully they listen to everybody, but I don't think they need to, for me right now, they don't need to intersect.
my wife isn't the biggest wrestling fan. She doesn't really watch it at all. She just happens to be married to me. And it's kind of the same thing, right? Like, you're married to your husband and he happens to be right. Running for president.
Right. That's what he happens to be doing. It's like, okay, great. I support you. Let's do this. But also, don't bother me because I'm doing a podcast.
Did Larry introduce you to him?
He did. But, you know, just as friends, I mean, he never.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. He never thought, oh, you guys would be great together. He
was RFK Jr.
Exactly.
Oh, that's amazing stuff. Cheryl, last few questions for you. Once again, talking about the end of this amazing legacy of a show. Are you happy with how Cheryl's character ends? With, obviously, she's married to Ted Danson. We haven't seen the last two episodes as we're speaking, but is it a good ending for her, in your opinion? You're looking away. Something happens probably. I don't know.
I'll have to talk to you about this after.
Part two.
Listen, Larry knows what he's doing.
We'll just leave it at that. Last question for you. What's your favorite scene that stands out from your time on Curb? Is there one that just is the one for you?
Well, yeah, there's an episode when I take colon blow and it kicks in while Larry and I are stuck in a car wash and I have to get out of the car while the car wash is going. So, you know, that scene, I remember when we were shooting, we shot in a car wash. And I thought, oh, this isn't a set. I'm just going to get out in the car wash. And that's what happened. I got out in the car wash. So I'll never forget that day.
You actually had to get out of the car as it was getting washed.
Yeah. And run through the you know, I don't know what these things are.
The weird things. Yeah. Well, Cheryl, it's been great to talk to you. And congratulations so once again on a great career and being so awesome on Curb.
Thank you. I love talking to you. I hope that we'll talk after.
Oh, I have. Yep. We'll do the epilogue.
Yeah, we'll do the epilogue.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Thank you.
Huh? Were we a hit?
We were a hit.
We were the highlight of this party.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a while, but we still got it.